so as it has been almost impossible to escape, Pottermania has once again descended upon us, with the latest Harry Potter movie getting good reviews and big numbers at the box office. But beyond the fans and the wizard outfits and the kids playing Quidditch in Prospect Park is a whole generation who grew up with J.K. Rowling's novels as perhaps their biggest cultural influence. If you're in that target demographic of 11, 12, 13 years old when the first novels came out, you are now turning 21, 22, 23. The first Wizard World preteen fans are now, dare we say, real-life, early 20s adults. So it may be time to put aside the childish things, but what are you keeping? What values has Potter taught you, and how are you bringing that into the real world? Call us up, 212-433-WNYC. If this sounds like you, 212-433-9692. Or if you're the parent of a first-generation Potter fanatic, a Harry Potter native, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And joining us for this is Melissa Anelli, who runs the popular Potter fan site called The Leaky Cauldron, and is the author of Harry, A History, The True Story of a Boy Wizard, His Fans, and Life Inside the Harry Potter Phenomenon. Melissa, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you.
So what do you make of our premise, running the Leaky Cauldron? There's another popular Potter fan site, MuggleNet.com, and as it happens, the guy who runs that site is turning 21 and getting married this year. So do you see this as happening? The generation of Harry Potter is growing up?
They really are, but the wonderful thing about Harry Potter is that people are just are discovering it every day. I mean, there are new 11, 12, and 13-year-olds.
Also, of course. And I have one at home, an 11-year-old who reads Harry Potter day in and day out, all the books over and over again, and went to see the movie on the first night that it was in the theaters this week and wouldn't have had it any other way. But for those who are older now, is it possible to say that there are certain things that they learn from Harry Potter world that they're likely to take into the real world?
Absolutely. I mean, Harry Potter sends a message of sticking up for the little guy. I mean, that's a huge part of the books. Harry doesn't, he never leaves somebody who can't defend himself to perish. He will put himself in danger as long as he can make sure that the people who don't have voices get heard. It's also a great object lesson about prejudice and about acceptance in the world. There's a lot of that. And when it's not, you know, now when you're 11, 12 and you read Harry Potter, you can read them all in you know, a couple of months or a couple of weeks. When we were waiting for these books, we were Harry Potter fans for, you know, a span of 10 years. So that this group of people is probably growing into people who are a lot more affected by the book's themes than others. There's a whole organization based on this called the HP Alliance. And their whole aim is to help people take the things they learn about Harry Potter and their feelings about of activism and their feelings of kinship with the book's themes and bringing them into the real world.
I remember when the second book came out, and it was first originally just released in the UK, and some people had brought copies back to some friends of mine around here. And, oh, the anticipation. It was like a piece of gold. You have the book. You have the book. Kids were so excited to see it. Leah in Riverhead, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. My name is Leah. I'm 20 years old. I'm on my way to a Harry Potter conference right now in San Francisco.
I'm there.
our guest is there.
It's been such an excitement growing up with Harry Potter. I went to go see the movie at midnight this week in costume. And I think one thing that's really been inspirational is the way that Harry isn't just someone who fights, you know, ultimate evil in the form of Voldemort. He's someone who stands up for ordinary people and stands up against people who aren't just pure evil. He fights the kind of fights we need to fight every day. I was just writing on the Huffington Post. He's got a really interesting conflict with the Minister of Magic, who throws people into prison without due process. And Harry doesn't just fight Voldemort. He fights injustice, the same injustices we have to fight in our world.
Leah, thank you so much. Nicely put. Lisa in New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Okay, but I mean, I just remember being 11 years old and sitting at my desk writing fan letters to J.K. Rowling, and the same desk I would do, like, practice my first long division. Until today, I mean, I think it taught me how to come up with creative solutions to problems. you're talking about like a second language helping you come up with alternate solutions. This was an alternate world, and it really was something you could get yourself embraced in and try and like be creative and novel with your ideas.
Lisa, thank you. So, Melissa and Ellie, we've already got fighting injustice and creative problem solving.
Yes. It's just, I mean, there's so many applications, and part of it is because Harry, the main character, he's just like, he has so much heart, and he just wants to do good, and that applies everywhere. And when you spend your time with that guy, you know, that protagonist, when he's the one whose head you're living in for 7 books, that sticks.
Natalie in Ocean Grove, you're on WNYC. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. You grew up with Harry?
I did grow up with Harry. I actually, the first book came out when I was 13, but I didn't discover the series until after my freshman year of college. And I think the most significant thing as far as Harry goes for me is the activism that's come out of the fandom for children and young adults, especially the Harry Potter Alliance, getting involved in protesting Darfur, making awareness about the genocide that happened in Rwanda. I know personally, as far as how Harry's affected my life, I graduated college writing multiple papers on Harry Potter, on the media, the significance of it being such an unprecedented media event and book event in history.
Harry Potter and Rwanda, Natalie, wow.
Yes.
Thank you very much. All right, Daniel in Fanwood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Helen. How are you doing?
Okay.
I just wanted to observe, as the parent of a 21-year-old who, you know, read from the beginning, that my daughter got from it a love of reading and a voracious appetite for reading, and her friends seem to have, from this love of reading, really got the idea that studying and doing well in school, good in school, was the way to better oneself and to figuring things out, because the books were basically mysteries, and so they developed that love and that appreciation for it.
Because it kept you wanting to come back and find out what happens, right?
I guess so, and just the curiosity and to expand one's mind through education.
Daniel, thank you very much. And Melissa and Ellie, I don't know if you get into this in your work for The Leaky Cauldron and your book, Harry, A History, but, you know, the question came up right away when these books became such pop culture phenomenons. Is this going to increase kids' interest in reading in general, or are they just going to finish Harry Potter and then, you know, go back to their Wii? Mm-hmm. Any way to tell now after all these years?
There have been studies. I mean, it's a little difficult to tell because sometimes the sample data is a bit skewed, but there have been studies that suggest that 75% of people who read Harry Potter and didn't beforehand were more interested in books afterwards. There was a study commissioned a couple of years back. And you hear it all the time. Anecdotally, we get it all the time. I talked in my book about one young man who was in a juvenile corrections facility. He never read, never was interested in anything. And he finally landed himself in one of these facilities, and his mother brought him Harry Potter, and all of a sudden he was reading Lord of the Rings, and all of a sudden he was reading, like, easy reader psychology books, and he wanted to go to school. Like, it really can make a difference.
Catherine in Poughkeepsie, you're at WNYC. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Good. Well, I guess I'm kind of not exactly the same case as that, because I always love to read, but I'm 20 and a half. I'm going to be a senior at Vassar next year. I'm an English major, but
20 and a half. I thought once kids get to about 10,
no,
they stop saying and a half.
I never let go of that. I like to keep things, you know, decimals and fractions.
Yeah. and maybe when you're 6 months away from drinking, then you hang on to it.
Yes, exactly. But I remember that when Harry Potter came out, suddenly, like, everyone my age was also reading, and it made me feel so much better about myself, because I was such a nerd that, like, when I saw other kids reading too, I was like, okay, I feel a little less awkward right now. And I did read the books too, and I loved them then, though looking back, I'm not really sure if the quality of writing is that fantastic.
Great call. Call us back in 15 years when you're 35 and a half and tell us that.
Okay, I will.
or much before that. Thank you very much for your call. And from our Facebook group, Melissa, listen to this. I really dislike how the uber commodification of HP, of Harry Potter, movies, merchandise, etc., renormalizes, reappropriates, and sanitizes a lot of what is interesting about the series. I am an original Potter enthusiast, and me and my similarly aged friends love what is most interstitial, weird, subversive, and, well, queer about the HP narratives. Can you relate to that?
I'm not sure that it's totally correct. I mean, when a movie franchise, when a book franchise gets sold to with movie rights, there are certain things you expect to come along with it. Like, for instance, you'll walk into a bookstore and you'll see now a major motion picture, and you'll see actors' images on the fronts of books. That's never happened with Harry Potter. There's been a very different tack taken. Now, there is no doubt that there's items in the stores out the wazoo. There's many things to buy. There's much commercialization around it, but I don't think the books have sanitized it. I mean the movies have sanitized the books. I think if anything, the movies have gone a little bit. I mean, there's a moment in Six where Cormac McLaggen, who is this person who's interested in Hermione, makes almost an obscene gesture to Hermione, and it's very, you never see this if they were trying to sanitize and dumb down the series.
So what's happening at this conference in our last 20 seconds? What do you do at a Harry Potter conference?
You get together, you dress in costume, you talk about how the series has changed you, you go to panels, you see the movie together. And it's a lot of fun.
And that's where we leave it with Melissa Anelli, who runs the popular Potter fan site, The Leaky Cauldron, and is the author of Harry, A History, the true story of a boy wizard, his fans, and life inside the Harry Potter phenomenon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And since we've been talking about values, good and bad, we will leave you with a song from wizard rock band Draco and the Malfoys, defending those not-so-great values that some of Harry Potter's enemies represent.
You see us knock others down to succeed. You see us as wizards who crave so much more than we. So what if we're cunning? So what if we're ambitious? We've got something burning up inside. We've got Slytherin pride.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.